Blog Talk Radio.
This is Cheryl Lee Ralph, and welcome to Diva Talk Radio. I just want to say Happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers out there. I know what you go through. I know your sacrifice. I know your joy. I know your tears. I even know and feel your fears. What a wonderful day I hope you all had, even if all you did was what you wanted to do. Because I know very often what I wanted to do on Mother's Day was absolutely nothing. I didn't want anybody to knock on my door to give me anything but some time to myself and some rest. But that's just me. So I hope that all of you had the kind of Mother's Day that you loved, needed, and deserved. You know, my Mother's Day was outstanding. It was fantastic. Yes, I was tired. I was so many things, but I was loving my Mother's Day because I got to see my daughter, Ivy Victoria, graduate with honors from Syracuse University. And I just have to tell you, if you look on my Instagram, yes, I had to jump for joy and shout, I did it, I did it. I had to thank my job, Instant Mom. I had to thank God for giving me a job that I could pay for my child's education so that she could graduate without the burden of debt. And I've got to tell you, you may know me, but you don't know my trial or my struggle, and that was only God. So I thank God. Hallelujah. Yes, yes, yes. And in exactly 3 more weeks, my son will graduate. So I was making some jokes with my son. I said, baby, you know how much mommy loves you, but I got 2 of you graduating. One of you is graduating cum laude, and the other one is graduating. Thank you, Lordy. Yes, 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 yes. I've heard that said at many a graduation, and now I know exactly what it means, because that is the situation that I am in, and I thank God for it. So, once again, Happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers. Happy graduation day to all of the graduates who are graduating all during the months of May and June. To all of the graduates, I know what you went through. I know your trials, your tribulations, your struggle. I knew and know what it takes to stay on course, to finish the race, to graduate. To all of you, I say job well done. Please carry on. Make us proud. If you need some more education, get some more education. Because you see, if you can get through undergraduate, you can really get through graduate. If you can find the money for undergraduate, you can find the money for graduate school. You know I talk about education all the time here. Education, education, education is truly the greatest equalizer. Those who are able to communicate well, knowledgeably, speak well, present themselves well, do the research, have the facts. Yes, the great equalizer. Now, that includes those people who are smart enough who, if they don't know anything, what do? They keep their mouth shut. Right. Now, that's also great brilliance, knowing when to be quiet. But we've got a great show here on Diva Talk Radio this week, and it is truly a follow-up to education, education. I've got great guests on, and we're going to be talking about the case of scandal, the Atlanta cheating scandal, where teachers were convicted of racketeering in Atlanta. This is a show you want to listen to. Trust me. I always say there is the truth, your truth, my truth, the truth. You're going to hear another side of the truth today, right here on Diva Talk Radio. I'm Cheryl Lee Ralph.
and we'll be right back.
This is Cheryl Lee Ralph, and welcome back to Diva Talk Radio. All right, so you know, I've shared with you what happened, at least the way it was reported to us, what happened. And I just want to go back on it again so that you all get it. In that Atlanta school cheating scandal, which I believe took place a little further back in Fulton County, Atlanta, I believe it was 2009. Anyway, all but one of the 11 defendants were actually charged with racketeering and other crimes that they said took place in the Atlanta public school. They said it was a cheating scandal. And at that time, 10 of the defendants were taken into custody, while one woman who was pregnant at the time, well, she remained out on bond until sentencing. Well, listen, I have a lot of feelings about it, but when I looked at my television, when I heard the sentence come down, I said, you know, there's more to this story, and we got to get and hear the other side to the story. So I'm very happy to welcome Philip Jackson of the Black Star Project 2 Radio. Welcome, Philip. How are you?
Oh, thank you. I am excellent. And thank you for having me and the people from the Atlanta 12. May I just tell you just how I got involved with this project?
Please.
Yeah. Well, I looked at the news on television. I listened to the radio. I read the newspapers. And what that meant was I drank the Kool-Aid like everybody else. I was being told these are evil, mean, bad people. And I believed it. And then I heard that they were being held on like $7 million bond, $4 million bond. And then I'm starting to think, well, they must have killed somebody. And then I'm starting to get these images of monsters. I said, and this is before the trial. I'm thinking to myself, they deserve everything they get. Simply from what the media fed me.
Right.
I was poisoned. And they did that to the whole country, Ms. Rose, to the whole country. They made us think that these people were guilty before they went to trial. And
right.
So this is what they said they were going to take them to trial over. They said, we're going to get them over stealing lots of money. They said, they're driving big cars, Rolls Royces, and they're making lots of money living in big houses. So let's get them on that. And then they said, well, you know, they're harming children. Children are being hurt and beaten. This is Atlanta, where we had 29 children killed back in the 70s and 80s. And these people, and the judge said this, he said, this is the worst thing that ever happened in Atlanta. This versus the 29 black children who were killed. He said, this was the worst thing that ever happened. And then they said, well, we're going to get them on cheating because they're cheaters. Well, Ms. Rill, cheating is not even a crime in Georgia. So it's not even a crime. If you cheat, it's not a statutory crime. So they couldn't get them on anything, but finally they said, you know what? We're going to get these teachers on something. And what they did, they brought out RICO. Now, RICO is what they use to go after mobsters, to go after El Capone, the Gambino family, to go after racketeers and gang leaders. They used it to go after first and second grade teachers, black teachers. All the teachers were black. All the ones who they tried were black. Now, there are a lot of people who said they cheated, but they only put black teachers on trial, and they went after first and second grade teachers, and they destroyed them. They destroyed them on trial. Now, at this point, I've decided I've got to do something. So I actually went into the courtroom. I was in the courtroom. I saw that judge. I was, you know, 20 feet away from him. There's something not right about that guy and about this case. And I was there. So at this point, I'd just like to turn it over to the people who, in my opinion, have been unfairly persecuted by this court system, by this country. And please, you guys, Attorney Mann, and she's really great at explaining the legal side of it. Please, Attorney Mann.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson, and thank you, Ms. Ralph, for allowing us to be with you and to try to shed some light on this travesty that took place in Atlanta, Fulton County, Georgia. In our year 2015, you would think that this would be unheard of in a city and in a county that's predominantly Black. However, it remains that, unfortunately, it can rear its ugly head still today. Just, you know, as Mr. Jackson was saying, the RICO conspiracy is what these educators were initially indicted. And just to be clear, there were 35 educators initially indicted back in March of 2013. They were all charged with RICO, which is the Racketeer Influenced Corrupt Organizations Act.
And now that RICO is very serious, because I believe that when you have a penalty for racketeering, the penalty for racketeering ranges anywhere from, isn't it, 5 to maybe 20 some odd years?
Absolutely. The minimum sentence is 5 years. The maximum sentence is 20 years, and it carries with it a maximum fine of $25,000.
Wow.
Now, this is for educators who are some of our some of our most well-deserved citizens.
Least-paid citizens.
And, exactly, and get paid pennies for the work that they do.
So if
However,
you get a fine of $25,000, and you are an educator, Lee, in debt.
If you, and especially if you are a former educator who has lost their job unfairly, how can you be expected to pay a fine of $25,000? It's a setup for failure. However, there were 35 educators initially indicted. By the time the case came to trial, we had, you know, one or two people to die, and then at the end of it, there were 12 people who actually stood their ground and said, I didn't do anything wrong. I don't care how sweet you make the deal. I'm not giving up on my principles. I will declare my innocence until the day I die. So those 12 went to trial.
In all of your years, when people say, I did nothing wrong, I will not take the deal, what usually happens to those people?
When someone professes their innocence, and the way the legal system works is that typically someone can profess their innocence from the very beginning. However, they take a look at what the evidence is that's going to be presented against them, and they make a determination that despite the fact that I might believe that I'm innocent, the evidence was so compelling against me that I'm going to take a plea, or they know that they are in fact guilty, and so that they'll take a plea then. In this case, that did not happen. To this day, those educators still, after a jury trial, they still maintain their innocence. And this was after they were given sweet sentencing recommendations. All they had to do was to say, I am in fact guilty, and I waive my right to an appeal, and they refused. They could have been doing weekends in jail, and they refused. You know, the saying, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything, and that is not these educators.
So what actually did happen, their innocence, which oddly enough nowadays, since we've got cameras on a lot of people, we're finding out that a lot of people were actually innocent, but they've said that they were innocent, but they were in fact convicted. What does the conviction look like?
Well, it depends on the level that you were in the school system. We had people who were teachers, first and second grade teachers on trial. We had people who were testing coordinators who actually administered the test at question. And then you had clients like the one I represented, Sharon Davis Williams and Ms. Cotman, who is on the phone as well. But what actually happened was when it came time to sentence these individuals, they were sentenced according to their level in the school system. And, of course, Ms. Cotman and my client, being the highest-ranking educators who actually went to trial, they got the most severe sentence, which started out, guess what, at a 20 to do 7, the maximum punishment, despite the fact that they'd never been arrested before in their life, let alone convicted of anything. They started out with the maximum punishment of 20 years to serve 7 and a $25,000 fine.
Why is it seems as though when you put any sort of color on what is perceived as crime, for people who have never done anything, it seems that more and more the maximum is thrown?
There are probably as many answers to that as there are, you know, people who would attempt to answer. But I would suggest to you that in our country and even in Atlanta, Fulton County, that there is a certain perception that follows African-Americans who are charged with crimes. When you look at the rate that we are charged with crime, the rate at which we are put in jail, the rate at which we are sentenced to death in comparison to other races, I think that it is not unusual. I hate to say that, but I think that it is consistent.
You know, Ms. Ralph, you asked a great question. You know, you asked the question, what does this conviction look like? What? Well, let me tell you just a little bit about the conviction and RICO. Number one, the first thing they did is lower the threshold of evidence. What that means is, you know, for a normal trial, you would have to have a certain quality of evidence, a certain integrity about the evidence. But they lowered the threshold for a RICO trial. Number two, they admitted what they call hearsay evidence. You know about hearsay. You know,
yes.
I heard. And this. So they admitted hearsay evidence. And number three, and this is probably the most vicious thing about RICO, they convicted these people whether they knew or not knew about what was happening. So they didn't even have to know about it. What many of the educators and teachers, they were removed. They didn't even know each other. They were convicted of being in a conspiracy with each other, and they didn't even know each other. But RICO does that, destroys the people, and it's broken them down financially. It has cleared out their bank accounts. They've lost their jobs. They've lost their houses. This is not the way that America is supposed to be working at this point.
I'm going to piggyback on something that you just said, because I was reading one of the attorneys said when they heard the verdicts, he said, if you were there for the 7 or 8 months that we were there at the trial and you saw the evidence and you saw the witnesses who testified, convicted people, liars, folks who admitted they lied, who got deals, and that was the evidence against our client, you'd be as surprised as we are. He was talking about the verdicts, and that was said by Attorney Keith Adams. So it seems like everybody was in shock when that judge came down with those verdicts the way that he did. So for everybody who's listening today on Diva Talk Radio, let me just try and tell you what we're talking about. In 2013, there was a Fulton County grand jury that indicted 35 educators from the Fulton County School District. Now, in this 35, there were principals, there were testing coordinators, and there were teachers. About 20 school system employees took a plea deal. And, attorney, if I'm getting any of this wrong, I want you to clear it up for me, okay? Review was done, and that state review determined that some cheating had gone on in more than half of the district's elementary and middle schools, and about 180 teachers were implicated to begin with. Is that all correct?
It is. And the 35 that were initially indicted, as I said, by the time we went to trial, there were only 12 who went to trial. By the time the verdict came out, the leader of this conspiracy ring, Dr. Beverly Hall, had passed away as well. We were forced to go to trial, and they were allowed to introduce evidence about people who weren't even in the trial. They were allowed to introduce hearsay evidence. Typically, hearsay is never admissible in a trial, never. Because of that, it's just hearsay. It's not reliable. The bulk of the state's case was based upon hearsay and perjured testimony. That's how these people were convicted. Because had the truth been told, there would have not been one conviction. However, that is the crazy nuance of RICO, is that RICO basically throws all the rules of evidence out the window, and you get a conviction. You can get a conviction based upon perjured testimony, upon hearsay testimony. And it really is up to the judge to control that. But in this instance, we didn't have a judge who was interested in, quote, a fair trial. We had a judge who was interested in one result, and that was a result that would find these educators guilty.
Now, there was, all of us who were listening to everything that was said, we were led to believe that the cheating, as was reported, was said to have dated all the way back to 2001. Now, there's an interesting thing about 2001, because at about that time, they said that the test numbers were starting to turn around for the kids in the school district, at least according to what they said when they were trying to do the indictments in 2013. And that 2005 and 2009, that's when they said the real cheating began, because that's when test answers were altered. They said that they were falsely certified and that everything was basically a mess with every student that took the tests in that Fulton County school district. Wow.
It was actually the Atlanta school district. Atlanta is one of the cities within Fulton County. And Ms. Cotman could probably address that particular piece better than anybody. She was an executive director. She had multiple principals who she supervised. So she could probably answer that best.
Great.
Ms. Cotman,
thank you. Yes.
Ms. Cotman, when we come back, I want you to talk about this and just tell it like it is. From your point of view, you are listening to Diva Talk Radio. We are talking about the other side of what I believe may probably have happened in that Atlanta school cheating scandals. We've got the folks who know what happened here with us tonight to talk about this day. I'm Cheryl Lee Ralph, and we'll be right back. This is Cheryl Lee Ralph, and welcome back to Diva Talk Radio. We're talking this week, as my listeners, you pay attention, so you know we're talking about that Atlanta school cheating scandal. And, you know, I believe there is the truth, your truth, my truth, and what did I start with? The truth. And we're hearing a different side of the truth. You know, the media might put it out there in lots of different ways, and how Mr. Jackson said it earlier, sometimes we drink the Kool-Aid. Well, we need to come to our senses and listen to some folks who have something to say. Attorney Mann, please introduce our listeners to Ms. Cotman.
Okay. Ms. Cotman is Tamara Cotman, and she was an executive director in the Atlanta Public School System at the time that this alleged cheating took place. The way the school system is broken down, you have the superintendent at the top, you have her cabinet, and then you have Ms. Cotman's boss, Ms. Augustine, and then the schools, I forgot the exact number of schools in the APS, but whether it's an elementary school or a middle school, they get broken down into districts. They actually call them school reform teams. And there are so many schools within each team. And Ms. Cotman was the executive director over SRT4, School Reform Team 4.
Great.
Well, Ms. Cotman, please, welcome to Diva Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, Ms. Ralph. Let me first just start by sharing just a little bit about my background. I came to Atlanta Public Schools in 2004. I was recruited to the city to serve children who look like me. I came from Wichita, Kansas, where I had been a teacher, principal, area superintendent, and I came knowing that this was a district that was already on a trajectory of success. So I didn't come expecting to find a lot of things out of place given the data that was already out there. Let me back up just a second, though, because you said something a few minutes ago I want to make sure that the country is clear on. You said there was a state review that found cheating. What actually happened was that the governor appointed special investigators, and they sent Georgia Bureau of Investigation, GBI, basically Georgia's version of FBI, into the schools with guns to get statements from individuals. There are many, many stories of teachers who claim they were threatened, who claim that, you know, that they put guns on the table in front of them. So I don't want people to think that this was a state-run investigation. It was run by a governmental law enforcement agency. When they found what they called evidence of improprieties, what they found was an erasure report. They used an erasure report that essentially said that any teacher who had students in any classroom where there were more than 3.2% erasures on any exam, grades 1 through 8, that classroom was flagged. Now, that's important because those exams were 50 items, 60 items, 70 items, depending on the grade level. But if you had more than 3 erasures, your classroom was flagged for further investigation.
Mm.
They turned that into a report, and I think this is really interesting. This report was used to indict 35 of us from 183 people that they claim did something wrong, and that included executive directors, it included the superintendent, people who never touched a test. I've never even been in close proximity of a test to even know what one looks like or what the items are on it. During testing,
You mentioned up the erasures, and that
yes.
was something that a lot of people talked about. There was that former Georgia Attorney General, is it
mm-hmm.
Mike Bowers?
Correct.
He said, Mike Bowers has a quote out there that says that there were cheating parties, that there were erasures taking place in and out of the classrooms, and that teachers were told to make changes to the students' answers on the test. He went on further to say that anything that you can imagine that could possibly involve cheating was done. He said that during his investigation, he heard that educators cheated out of pride to earn bonuses, to enhance their careers, or to keep their jobs.
That is exactly what he said. But let's look at the reality of that statement. There are two schools, and both of those schools, both Parks Middle School and Gideon's Elementary School, where they admitted taking the test. They were found out. They actually took plea deals. They never took misdemeanors. They never served a day of jail. Both of those school principals allowed their staff to take the test off on a weekend, over a weekend, and bring them back. That's two schools out of 59 schools that engage in that practice. But what I find interesting is in that report, that they used to indict us, that they turned around the prosecution and asked the judge to prohibit that from being used as evidence in court. I always thought that was interesting, that something that could be used to indict me could not be used as evidence against me in court. My question is why?
Mm.
Yes, he talked about people with bonuses, but when he made that statement, he had not check the facts. They took 12 of us to trial. 7 of us, including myself, when I say us, I'm part of that group, never received a penny of bonus money. What's even more troubling is the five people who did obtain bonus money during the entire time of this indictment, this window. It doesn't total more than $3,500. The year in question, the very year, 2009, that started this inquiry, $1,500 in bonus money was the total amongst five people.
So when you say that, let's be clear that the amount of bonus money we are talking about is
$1,500. In 2009, divided by five people. That was their total amount.
Divided by five people. So
correct.
No one person got $1,500. Person got something around $300, if I'm doing my fifth grade math correctly.
Ms. Ralph Phillips Jackson here. What happened is if you average it out, each of the 12 got $5.80 a month, which is enough for a cup of Starbucks. And so what they're saying is that these people did all this cheating for a cup of Starbucks coffee. Not acceptable. Not acceptable.
It doesn't make sense to me that you would do all of this cheating just to be prideful, just to earn a $5 bonus, to enhance your career, or to keep your job. Because none of that happened. Go ahead.
No, and what's troubling is you're talking about people who dedicated their entire lives. I spent 23 years serving urban children in two districts. 23 years. When I came to Atlanta, I came with an impeccable reputation, stellar performance. I supervised up to 23 principals in this district, and not one of my principals was indicted, not one. I was indicted. I went to trial in 2013 in September. I was found not guilty of witness intimidation. I was taken back to trial with the same evidence and essentially the same witnesses. I think they dropped three or four people, and I was found guilty. I am still wrapping my entire mind around how I could conspire with a group of principals who were never indicted. Every single person I supervised was cleared. I have colleagues who now have a felony conviction because two or three principals within their area of supervision engage in wrongdoing. And what's interesting about that, and I shared this earlier today with someone, you can go on YouTube and you can type in the name Armstead Salters. Mr. Salters was the principal of Gideon's Elementary. When he came to court, he took his plea. He admitted that his teachers took tests home over the weekend. When he took his plea, he came to court, he raised his hand, and he said, I cannot lie. I know I may have to go to prison for this. But Mr. Pitts, my boss, never put pressure on me, and the superintendent, Dr. Hall, never put pressure on me. I did it because I wanted to look good.
Oh, my goodness.
It's in video. Lucius Brown is another principal. He worked for Dr. Davis Williams, my colleague. He came in the courtroom. He had already taken his arraignment. He admitted his guilt. This is a school that's interesting. That's a school where the principal, the secretary, and an instructional coach who was supposed to support teachers, the three of them are the only guilty parties in the school. No teachers engaged in any wrongdoing. Those three people who worked in an office, who were there to protect and serve children, did not do what they were supposed to do. But when he took the stand, he said out of his own mouth, Dr. Davis Williams didn't put any pressure on me. What I did was selfish and selfless pressure on me. So you have all these theories that were put out in that report that was full of so much bogus information. That report accuses me of intimidating a woman, and I was in California on the date that they said I was in her building. I was in California. So when I tell you that report was used, it was full of innuendos, it was full of false statements, and when those special investigators were brought to court, one of them was asked, you know, did you check these things out? And he said, oh, we didn't have time to check anything out. We just gathered the information and wrote the report. So you took what people said as face value, and you used it to criminally indict people, charge us, and then it wasn't even good enough to be used during the legal proceedings. That is disturbing. It's disturbing.
That is very disturbing. And it's interesting, you know, when you go back and, you know, you say that when you came to the district, you were recruited and you were looking at a district that you saw on the upswing, that things were turning around when you came there. And you said that you came there in 2008, was it?
2004. I came in 2004, and when I came, Atlanta Public Schools had already started initiating massive reforms. I mean, Dr. Hall came in first, laying a foundation for literacy. She required every school to adopt a reform model that met their community's needs. And there was intense focus on improving teaching and learning. And, you know, I want people to set aside, you know, forget the CRCT, the local test that was tampered with by, you know, a handful of people, because I want to get the numbers right. There were over 3,000 instructional employees in Atlanta Public Schools when I worked there, over 3,000. To go from 3,000 to 183 that you suspected something wrong to 35 that you charged suggests by numbers alone that what we're talking about was neither systemic nor pervasive. But what's troubling is...
Let me say something here, because I'm listening to you talk, and in doing a little tiny bit of research on how things can get a little twisted here, when you said that you came to a school district that was on an upswing, the people who were committed to seeing a change, the groundwork that was laid down for a change, and you said that was in 2004. Well, right, you said 2004. Well, in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution paper, they said that they were doing investigations into the remarkable and suspicious improvements on standardized tests that were to them back in 2008, which I find very odd. So you get a group of people coming in 4 to 5 years ahead of that who are dedicated to improvement. Improvement happens on time in just about 4 to 5 years later. And that improvement is called what? Remarkable. Suspicious. How could they improve? Right. Is anybody paying attention? Because it seems to me that sometimes when we make our minds up to advance ourselves, folks are like looking at you like, well, wait a minute, the deck has been so stacked against you, how can you improve? And if you are improving, you must be lying. You must be cheating, because I stacked this deck against you. You're not that smart. You couldn't be that dedicated to the community. You couldn't be working overtime with those kids. Now, I'm saying this in the back of my mind thinking, we do know that we do have some people who want to look better, who do the wrong thing, but we all know the song. One bad apple don't spoil the whole bunch. This is Cheryl Lee Ralph. You are listening to Diva Talk Radio. We will be right back of more of the other side, some more truth about that Atlanta school cheating, really, scandal. This is Cheryl Lee Ralph, and welcome back to Diva Talk Radio. We're talking about the Atlanta school. They call it the cheating scandal. And we were just, we left off talking with Tamara Cotman. And Tamara, I want to open back up with you, because before we go on to our next guest, please let me know what you believe it's important for our listeners to know about this scandal.
Well, I think it's important for people to know that outside of Atlanta, there are some national statistics, specifically the NAEP exam, which is administered by a group called NCES, that's the National Center for Education Statistics. And when Dr. Hall came here, beginning in 2002, she asked Atlanta, she actually volunteered Atlanta to participate to have the NAEP scores, which is considered the gold standard for testing across the United States. She wanted our scores to be compared to other large urban districts. And so in 2002, looking at our fourth grade math alone, 50% of our kids in Atlanta were scoring below proficiency. 10 years later, in 2013, Atlanta Public Schools had 72% of their kids scoring proficient or above. Atlanta Public Schools, when I came here, received an award for the fastest growing growth on any urban district on our fourth and our eighth grade reading and math scores. That test is not administered by Atlanta Public Schools employees. People fly in from all over the country. They bring the test with them. They administer the test to students. They leave. The tests aren't left in our possession. There's a random assignment, so every fifth or eighth child in every school is assessed. So you can't even cherry pick kids. And it's important that people know that there is other data out there that causes you to question, wait a minute, were some of these results real? The year that we were under investigation suspicion, in 2009, Atlanta received an award for having the highest number of Gates Millennium Scholars in the country.
Wow.
You don't get a Gates Millennium Scholarship on CRCT scores. You get that based on ACT and SAT performance. And so I think we just have to take a look at the entire Atlanta picture and begin to question for ourselves. It's not what you read in the papers. It's information people can go out and find on their own to see that, you know, over the course of years, we produce hundreds of kids who achieve Gates Millennium Scholars, Posse Scholars, because of their academic preparation, not because they were cheated out of a quality education. And I just think it's important that people know that.
You know, and by the way, I just want to bring this up. Everybody has been talking about this Atlanta cheating scandal as if it was the largest, biggest, greatest cheating scandal ever to take place in the United States of America's history of education. Well, it's not. It came to my view that there was a test score erasure situation that took place during the former D.C. Chancellor Michelle Rhee's tenure, okay? And that seemed as if it was so big it could most assuredly top the what happened in Atlanta. But that would only happen if the situation was properly investigated, because there's one thing that keeps coming up is that this was an under-investigated case. And what happened on April Fool's Day, April 1st, 2015, was certainly no big joke at all. Can anybody talk about that, please?
Yes, Ms. Ralph. This is Philip here.
Wait a minute, Philip. I just want to say this. I want everybody to know that once there was a little bit of an investigation into Michelle Rhee, I just want you to know that the test scores just fell through the floor, as in they dropped all the way down once she was no longer the chancellor in D.C. So please carry on.
Yes, Ms. Ralph. A couple of things. We have found out that the alleged cheating that occurred in Atlanta was pretty much in a norm. It was pretty much the same that was happening in every other big city school district in the country. There was literally no difference between what was happening in Atlanta and Washington, D.C., Chicago, Los Angeles. So Atlanta wasn't special that way. We also found out that even while Atlanta was being persecuted, and that's what I call this. I don't call it a cheating scandal. I call it the Atlanta persecution scandal of teachers. But even though it was happening in Atlanta, in Georgia, there were other similar cheating incidents. But still, within this norm, all of a sudden, we pick Atlanta out. We single mm-hmm. out Atlanta for some reason, and we can talk about that. But this is what we found, because you talked about Washington, D.C., when after the cheating was discovered, whatever that means, scores went down. In Atlanta.
After the chancellor left.
after the cheating was discovered, scores continued to rise, basically due to the reforms that this team that you're talking to put in place. They continue to rise based on the work that these people did. So you know, when we look at it, and this is, I'm going to be a little mean-spirited here, maybe this is really about this country not wanting black children to learn. Maybe that's what this is really about. Maybe they actually saw black children outperforming, you know, other children, moving forward, being excellent. And you know, and I hate to say that, but based off of everything that I'm looking at, there is not really another reason that these teachers have been persecuted in this way.
And this is Attorney Mann. Just to kind of piggyback on what Mr. Jackson just said, I recall talking to a witness, and she was a special education instructor. And she recalled for me a meeting that Dr. Hall had with some of the principals and some of the instructional coaches. And she says, I remember vividly sitting in that meeting, and this was in early 2000. I think Dr. Hall came in 1999. And Dr. Hall told them in that meeting, she said, one day, we are going to look up, and we are going to be questioned about the progress that we are making, because people honestly believe that black kids cannot learn.
The truth.
She knew that. She knew that the reforms that she had put into place, the emphasis on literacy, if you can't read, you can't do math. If you can't read, you can't do science. If you can't read, you can't do social studies. She understood that. So her focus early on was on literacy. And so when the reading scores started to go up, she knew that there would be questions about it. And as you said, there was not just cheating in the Atlanta School District. There was cheating throughout multiple school districts throughout the state of Georgia. However, it was only the Atlanta School District, which is in Fulton County, where the prosecutor, I believe, based upon political motivation, decided and elected to indict these people under RICO conspiracy. It had never been done before. Not in another school district in Atlanta or anywhere across the country am I aware of where a teacher or an educator has been prosecuted, criminally charged, and placed in jail for cheating. As Mr. Jackson stated, on the books in Georgia, you cannot find cheating. Cheating is not against the law. Typically, the way this has been handled and the way it's been handled in other school districts in Atlanta is that it was handled through the Professional Standards Commission, and that is the body that holds the licensing for teachers.
Okay.
Everybody else handled it appropriately. Again, it was only in Atlanta with only black educators who were indicted and charged with RICO. Is that because they don't have white educators in the city of Atlanta? No, absolutely not. But not one of them got indicted.
Not one of them.
Not
one. My guests today have all been involved in some way in the Atlanta cheating scandal, and I hate the way it sounds, but that's exactly what everybody knows of when you talk about this case that we're talking about today. Before I do my wrap-up, is there anybody else who would like to say something about this case?
This is Rory Edwards.
Hi, Rory.
How are you? So wonderful
Good,
to talk to you,
you
again. And I just want to share a little bit. I think there's three things that I really want to share. Just like Ms. Cotman, I was recruited to come to Atlanta through the process of running an all-male academy. In Connecticut, I had an all-male academy that I did for 10 years. And the 100 Black Men of Atlanta was starting an all-male academy, which is actually in existence currently in the Atlanta Public Schools called Best Academy. And so I was recruited to come here to actually help them develop that school. Now, one of the priorities for coming here was that Dr. Hall had instilled in the Atlanta Public School system a thirst or maybe a quest for excellence. And so they were trying to figure out what was the biggest deterrent in any school district in America, and that question was the advancement of black males. And so based on the success that I had going from the coast of Africa all the way back to the coast of Maine to develop programs for black males, one of the things that they thought, and a great gentleman who actually was the person who brought me here named Lionel Woodyard, who was a member of the 100 Black Men of Atlanta, was that we want to develop a male that is going to be able to be the leader of the future. And so one of the things, when I looked at this case, and I looked at it from afar, because just like Mr. Jackson said, I too drank a little bit of the Kool-Aid. And I really don't even drink Kool-Aid. I don't even drink carbonated water. But I drank a little bit of the Kool-Aid because I said, this is sad that all of our children are being misrepresented by our black educators. And so when I looked a little deeper, I looked into, I'm a words person. So one of the things that I looked at was defining cheating. And so for me, defining cheating means not giving access to all of the resources. And so when you say someone cheated on someone, they didn't give the students who were in their care all of the resources that they were provided for them to be as successful as everybody else in America. And so that was totally a facade, because the mere fact that what Ms. Cotton referred to earlier was that over the 10-year period that you were talking about the investigation, the students continued to grow and to continue to become successful students. So that information was totally a farce. And then the other thing was that they talked about the testing. Now, when you look at the testing, you know, first of all, it was the No Child Left Behind. And so that was just based on people being able to comprehend information. And one of the things that we know is that if you talk about literacy in America, there's 300 million people in America. There's about a million or more people in America who are at an illiterate rate of comprehension. And so if that's the case, there's a whole lot of courts that need to be filled up with people who have cheated our children or our adults out of the ability to be able to comprehend and read at a level that's successful. And
now,
so all we have to do
is saying, what you're saying is very, very deep. Because when you go through public schools in America, it is not at times, in some places, just the students who are challenged.
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
Right.
All you have to do is walk through schools and listen to the dialect of the individuals who are teaching them.
Thank you.
You have to listen to the parents that are teaching them.
Thank you.
Everybody who goes through a teacher's college, I went through a teacher's college. Now, one of the things that I did when I was a principal of a school, I made sure that every individual who came through my school was competent in the subject that they taught. Because the bottom line is that we're not producing teacher mills, but we're producing the future leaders of America. And so when you talk about one of the things that is evident is the dropout rate. When you look at Detroit, and you look at the black male dropout rate of 90%, and you're telling me that there's a system that's in place that is working, you're totally fooling yourself, right? And what I mentioned earlier in the break is that I talked about a pilot program. What we have seen in America, and Philip alluded to this earlier, is we've seen in America the testing of the persecution of blacks at any cost, and it started with black males being shot down in the street. So what they did is they picked the Atlanta public school system to prosecute and persecute 12 black teachers, and we're going to see if this works in Atlanta, because Atlanta is now labeled the Mecca, all of
now,
the
now, what's frightening, what's frightening about what you're saying here is that if you're going to, because I'm starting to see like a bigger picture here, because it seems like if they're black teachers on trial, that's just the start of it. Because very soon what will happen is teachers will be on trial. Then
they sure
what
will
be happening is you're going to be busting teachers' unions. And then once you bust the teachers' unions, now we got more problems, because who's really going to teach these children? Then the picture gets even larger, and it leads me to believe that the public educational system is under heavy fire, and children who are on the fringe are suffering the most, and it is not right, and people don't really care.
People don't care because people don't care when it's not in their home. When it hits your home, then all of a sudden it becomes a problem. one of the biggest things that has happened in the black community in the educational system was a decision in 1954, Brown versus Board of Education, because it talked about separation, integration into a system that really never was planned for us, right? So then what happened is that one of the greatest things in education is, and Ms. Common can definitely can relate to this, is how you get students to be successful is through relationships. Students who fail say, the one thing that I did not, the reason why I failed is because I didn't have anybody who looked like me or cared about my true issues. And when you start to persecute teachers who look like you, then what you do is you eliminate those students from being successful because there's no one who can relate or identify with their issues. And so
it's
what
very
I,
interesting
what,
that you say that. There was a graduation last week where I guess the principal overlooked the valedictorian or one of the speakers. And
that's right. That's right. Right here in Georgia.
It was there in Georgia.
That's right.
People were saying, how can you just skip over the valedictorian speech? And she just yelled out, you all are being very rude. Well, look who's leaving. All
that's
of
right.
the black people. What is going on?
You see what
on?
I mean? Right. And that's the thing that is happening. And so what needs to happen is that this, the good thing about this, there's really no good thing about this. But in everything
right.
you must look at, the lesson and the blessing, right? So the lesson is that if we do not come together as a unit of black people and start to stand up for one another and put our egos in the basket before we come in the door and support
yes.
each other on our initiatives and our objectives on what we need to do as educators, as motivators, as anything that has to do with the development of the black community, then what we'll continue to do is get the treatment that they believe that we are second-class citizens, right?
Mm.
So
mm-hmm.
this is the thing that's what's happening. It's a pilot program to see if we can do this in Detroit next week, if we can
okay.
do this in Chicago next week, if we can do this in Cleveland next week, if we can do this in Connecticut next week, wherever we feel that there is an influx of black teachers and black students who are failing, let's try this RICO program because they can't win with this. And so that's what I'm saying from this whole perspective. I am on a mission right now, and I told Mr. Jackson and Ms. Cotman and Attorney Frank earlier that Sheila and I are on a mission to get as many people as we possibly can to be aware of this issue and to address this from not just an Atlanta agenda, but just like they did, we got to do it from an international agenda and show them that we are people who care about the outcome of not just our children, but our legacy. And so this is what my purpose is in this. And I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my information this evening.
You are more than welcome. I want to thank all of my guests this evening here on Diva Talk Radio. And to all of my listeners out there, education is true power. Education is true power. Wisdom is the great equalizer, but you only get some wisdom after you've got some education and have lived a little bit of life. Please don't cheat our children out of their just deserves. Every child in America deserves a proper education because, you see, hunger and ignorance, if you don't take care of those two things, they are coming for you, especially those who hunger for knowledge. Piece of the action. And I played a young, angry, disenfranchised girl. And the teacher looked at her and she said, can you do the work? And I remember the character sitting there confused saying, you think I don't know what this is about? This is just some poverty. And she said the word, but I'll just say BS. Well, I was 19 years old when I did that movie. So that lets you know that almost 40 years later, that movie was right then as it is happening right now. When are we going to make the change? When are we going to stand up for our children? Because we can't keep living in this revolving cycle of poverty and ignorance and lack.
It is not what we went through slavery for. And don't get me started, because this is the end of Diva Talk Radio. If you want to hear more, tune in next week. I am Cheryl Lee Ralph, and I love you just the way you are, enough to bring you all sides of the truth, because we got stuff that we need to talk about and clear up right here on Diva Talk Radio. I'll see you next week.